Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Welcome back. So we're going to get into, we got a lot to get into. And I feel like, you know, this training camp, this summer in general is flying. Just like the summer has flew by. Back to school. Like, you know, people going to be doing back to school shopping for the next few weekends and so forth, but we got NFL to cover. I might have a college football topic I want to talk about and discuss, but we're a week into training camp. I think it's always interesting to see the training camp videos and, you know, obviously the fights, but then, you know, the highlights, the lowlights, who's looking good. Obviously, unfortunately, these unprecedented injuries, these untimely injuries in training camp, that's always kind of hard to watch, and not really a good sign. But we're gonna get into all of it. First and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kitt of the Isaiah Kitt Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening or that is going to listen to this podcast eventually. Thank you. Greatly appreciate it. You know, like I said, so we're just the summer and the calendar is just flying by. I want to get to a couple of NFL stories that I think is interesting that I think, you know, I want to obviously talk about with you guys. I haven't did like a little quarterback thing. So that's kind of a hint of what we're going to look into. But like I said, man, it's just so much going on in the world of sports right now. But I want to have, I want to react to Mike Sandoz of The Athletic, his annual quarterback tier list that he does on a yearly basis. Now, if you are a regular listener, shouts out to the regular listeners. If you are a regular listener, you know, that we kind of go over this Mike Sando. He has a lot of connections with, you know, coordinators and coaches and executives around the league. And he basically gets them to vote around the same time every year. And they put together this four quarterback tier list. So there's four tiers. I thought I actually had the descriptions of the tiers pulled up, but tier one, it includes the top guys. So tier one is Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, Justin Herbert. Those are the tier one guys. Tier two includes Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Trevor Lawrence, Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford, Deshaun Watson, and Kirk Cousins. Tier three has Kyler Murray, Derek Carr, Jared Goff, Russell Wilson, Tua, Jimmy G, Daniel Jones, Geno Smith, Justin Fields, Ryan Tannehill, Mac Jones, Brock Purdy. And then tier four has Kenny Pickett, Jordan Love, Baker Mayfield, Sam Howell, Desmond Ridder, and Gardner Minshew. So those are the quarterbacks that were listed. Obviously, the rookies are not going to be there. But these are the tier lists. And like I said, I go over this. A lot of people go over this list. I think this list tend to be pretty accurate for the most part over the years. It's been pretty accurate. I like how Sando does it, where he gets a lot of input, you know, I think if you read the article in The Athletic, I have a subscription with The Athletic. You should subscribe. But if you read the article, it's available there, and they go super in depth in like the tiers, the breakdown of the tiers, and why certain players are in certain tiers and so forth. So yeah, that's kind of like a synopsis. Now, the top tier guys, I don't think there's really much to discuss. Like, Mahomes is awesome. Yes. Like, you know, coming off an MVP season, Super Bowl MVP, like, two Super Bowls in 5 years, arguably off to the best career start, like, best 5-year career start, like, ever, right? Burrow is awesome. I can see MVP in his near future. Rodgers, you know, had a down season for his standards. For his standards, he had a really down season. But I think all of the, like, everything, all the signs are pointing to Rodgers having a really good year this upcoming year. So I'm willing to bank on that, that that's going to happen, actually. And I do have a description of tier one, just if, like all the tiers, but here's tier one. A tier one quarterback can carry his team each week. This team wins because of him. He expertly handles pure passing situation. He has no real holes in this game. And that's essentially what it is. That sounds right about those guys that's in that group, that crop. That's them, right? Like, that's them for the most part. Tier two and tier, I want to get tier two and tier three because, believe it or not, it's a reason why tier three has the most quarterbacks out of any tier, right? I don't think that's just coincidental. But a lot of these guys, like, they're going to dictate what happens this season. Like they're going to dictate what happens this season and what the league looks like. Because, like I said, Kansas City, barring any, you know, horrendous injury, they're going to be Kansas City. Like, Cincinnati, barring any injury, because we saw Joe Burrow, he dealt with a, looked like a, turns out it wasn't as serious as it looked, but barring injury, Cincinnati should be pretty good. You know, right? You know, Buffalo should be pretty good. So, my attention is just not there. The guys that's going to really dictate the season, like Trevor Lawrence and Dak, like, those are the guys that are, like, I feel like are the movers, and they're going to really have a lot of, like, impact on what happens. Now, we can start at tier two with a guy like Matthew Stafford, who last year, if I'm being blunt, if I'm being honest, just was not good. Now, obviously, he had the elbow injury, and that played a part. And I would admit, I am concerned about the elbow injury. Now, I was happy for Matthew Stafford that he got out of his Detroit situation, went to LA, got Sean McVay, got a really good team, and what do you know? In his first year, he wins the Super Bowl and he cashes in. And now up until this point, like, he has everything. Like, Matthew Stafford, you know, he got some passing numbers. He got a championship now. He has a nice contract. A lot of defensive coordinators think he plays in fuck it mode. Like, he just, it's like, it's whatever. And at times, especially last year, you saw that. Now, he's like a poor man's Brett Favre. He's a risk taker. He is a gunslinger at heart. But the reason why I'm so concerned about his elbow injury and the possibility of it, like, reoccurring, is because when you think about Matthew Stafford and his best strength, it's not that he's just, like, this really good athlete. It's not that he's the most accurate. It's not that he has, like, the prettiest deep ball, but it's his actual arm strength. Like, we marvel at Matthew Stafford's arm talent and his arm strength. And I think, you know, we've seen it. We saw just recently, a couple years ago, with Ben Roethlisberger, where his elbow kind of blew out on him, and Roethlisberger was just not, like, Roethlisberger was a cold turkey. Like, Roethlisberger was just a cold turkey. And with Stafford, health has always been a concern and a question mark. As he's aged, you know, he's been in this league for a long time. He's been on some bad teams for a long time. Me banking on him staying healthy throughout the duration of the year, I don't know if I'm a bet man. I don't know if I want to do that. So, with Stafford, I really just think it depends on what Stafford are we getting in terms of health-wise. If we're still going to get a guy that's still recovering from that naggy elbow injury and it just never gets better and it just goes downhill, the Rams are going to probably have a similar year to what they had last year. Now, I am optimistic that I don't think McVay wants to suck consecutive years, right? I don't think he wants to be that bad consecutive years. But if Stafford isn't healthy, you know, obviously got Stetson Bennett, you know, who knows what happened? Who knows what happened if Stafford is not healthy, especially with him making, you know, big bucks? Who knows? Who knows? But from a betting man, I would be really concerned about Stafford's elbow injury because it actually plays into his best trait as a quarterback. The next guy who I think who I want to talk about, I think he is the most polarizing outside of the tier one guy, the tier one group. He might be the most polarizing quarterback out of this whole tier two, tier three list. And it's Dak Prescott. And, you know, I think it doesn't help that he's the Cowboys quarterback because people either love him or hate him, right? Like, there's some people that's like, I'm not really a Dak guy. You know, his intangibles are good, but the tangible things are shaky. And then there's some people that just rave about Dak. And I kind of find myself in the middle of it. I like Dak. I think Dak's a top 10 quarterback. I think he's a really good quarterback. I don't think he's an elite quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback. Now, I know a lot of people, especially dating back from last year, looking back at last year, they're going to talk about the interceptions. And for me, interceptions, that stat for quarterbacks can't, especially in today's game where it's like so pass heavy, I think the interception stat can be a little bit, you know, overstated or over talked about and over discussed. Now, I think a lot of it, I think some of it in terms of Dak's interceptions, his arm is average. Like he has an average arm compared to, you know, the Mahomes, the Josh Allens, the Justin Herbert. Like his arm is just average. So if he is, if his timing is off, if Dak's timing is off, or his accuracy is off, the mere fact that his arm is average, it makes his passes more pickable, like more interceptable. I hope that makes sense. I hope that concept makes sense. But with Dak, it's also, okay, the playoff performances, mainly the last two versus the 49ers, where he just didn't look like himself. And then last year, you got to think about it, he came off the 5-touchdown game versus Tampa. Say what you want about Tampa, but Dak looked really good in that game. And people was like, well, can he parlay this? And he didn't. And I would just say this with Dak. I think the Cowboys are really good. I think they're so good that they're going to be competing with Philly to win this division, the NFC East. Now, like I said, Dak isn't a great quarterback, right? And usually, that's who wins Super Bowls. But this Cowboys team, they have a lot of the things that you need to be playing in the last two Sundays of the season. Like defensive and offensive impactful players. They got like game changers type guys. Like Michael Parsons, the game changer. CeeDee Lamb up into like he's turned into a game changer. Trayvon Diggs with his ball hawking abilities and now him being like a pretty good coverage corner, he's a game changer. They got those type of guys on both sides of the football. Pass rush is really good. And then say what you want, but the coaching staff is not bad. This is a good coaching staff. Mike McCarthy, he wins a lot of games. Now we can question, is he like a great coach? Is he an elite coach? Like, okay, we can talk. We can have further discussions about that, but we're talking about a really good coaching staff. So could Dak have an outlier year or go on a stretch where he has like a, you know, cause you know, like a Flacco type run? I think he could. I think that's possible. And we've seen time, you know, there's been times where guys like Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco, even Cam Newton, Eli Manning done it twice where, they get hot and they go on some runs and they end up in the Super Bowl and like, you know, Flacco and Eli, they end up winning it. I think Flacco is a little bit of a better comparison. Like Flacco first was always a pretty good performer in the postseason, but then that 2013 year, he was just unstoppable. Or 2012, which one? I think it's 2012. One of those years. And he was just unstoppable and he got hot. And can Dak do that? Can he like late December going into January just get hot out of nowhere and play the best 3-4 games of his life? That could possibly happen. This team is that good that the possibility is real and it could happen. You know, so that's Dak. Kirk Cousins, who I think is very similar, but I think Dak kind of beats him out and edge him out because Dak is, he can do a little bit more off script. Dak can do a little bit more in terms of athletic, in terms of things, you know, moving the pocket, getting out of the pocket. making something out of nothing, turning a broken play into something positive. Kirk has those. Now, that's where limitations with Kirk Cousins come into play, where he's a sitting duck and he's just a cold turkey. He's just a cold turkey. And you kind of know what you're getting with Kirk Cousins. Now, albeit, I think he's always been a pretty likable guy to me. But after watching, if you watch the Netflix documentary series, Quarterback, you can see that Kirk Cousins, it's hard not to root for a guy like Kirk Cousins. But his limitations are his limitations. And you kind of know what you're getting. You're not going to ever stink. You're not going to win like 3 or 4 games when Kirk Cousins is your quarterback. No. But he is a quarterback that keeps you relevant and in the thick of things and occasionally can win the division. And, you know, he can win 12, 13 games. And, you know, I don't think the Vikings are destined or prone to do that this year, but they won't stink. Because Kirk Cousins, he keeps you relevant. But you know what you're expecting. You're probably not going to win a Super Bowl with him. You're probably not going to win multiple playoff games with him. So that's just that. Deshaun Watson and the Browns, I think both of those things are interesting. Watson and they're like very interesting. The Browns, really good on paper, but like it's the Browns. It's like one of those things like, do we really trust the Browns, right? Like, do we really trust them, especially in that division that they're in? It's pretty good. But then with Watson, I think it's fascinating because at times, like back in 2020 where the Texans won 4 games, but he had some phenomenal numbers. Like, I think he led the league in passing yards. Like, he had 30-plus touchdowns. Like, Deshaun Watson had a really good year in 2020. Now, I never thought he was a top 5 guy. Maybe like a top 7, 8. I never thought he was a top 5 guy. I don't think he's ever going to probably be a top 5 guy. But with Watson, last year, his last 6 games, which I kind of expected, it was hard to watch. He was definitely not it. And, you know, I think a lot of people are kind of giving him a pass because it's like, okay, hasn't played in nearly 2 years and it's going to take some time. Now, I will say this. If I'm a betting man, does Deshaun Watson get back to that top 7 type quarterback play? I don't know. Is it more likely that Deshaun Watson is a top 7, 8 quarterback this year, or is he somewhere between 11 and 14? I don't know. And wherever he falls on that scale, it's gonna kind of depend on what the Browns do. If last year was just last year and it was just Russ and Deshaun Watson get back to that level he was playing at Houston, the Cleveland Browns have legitimate hope that they can be a playoff team possibly. With that defense, with, you know, some of the elements that they have on their squad, they could potentially be a playoff team if he can get back to that level where he was in Houston, especially in 2020. Now, if he's a top, if he's, like I said, on that back end, if he's like 11th to 14th, then the Browns, they're gonna be a 7-8 win team, and Deshaun is gonna be a mid of the pack quarterback, and that's what's gonna be what it is. I don't know. Deshaun Watson's very interesting. A lot of people gonna pay attention to him. I just don't know what to expect. I don't know what to expect. Next guy I wanted to talk about, Russell Wilson. Kind of similar to Deshaun Watson in terms of had a really bad year. And Russell, obviously, he, you know, got traded Denver. People had some high expectations. And we, like, since the end of the season, we've been trying to really find, like, a lot of people been trying to find, answers, searching for answers as to why Russell Wilson was as bad as he was last year. And I think there's some contributing factors. Like, schematically, I thought there was an issue there. Russell kind of, you kind of saw that Russell, he is not that caliber quarterback, of the same ilk of like Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, where Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, they went to new locations and they kind of like took over and it was their show. And Russell is not that same. I don't think he's from that same cloth. I don't think he's in that same tier. And that's what Russell was trying to prove. I think Russell should just get back to being Russell. Athletically, he looked okay at times. At times, he looked a little bit chubbier than usual. I will tell you this, and, you know, I think Sando kind of talked about it in this article, but Russell Wilson has been trending down in terms of the votes that he gets on his tier list. So maybe, you know, coordinators and, you know, maybe coordinators and GMs know something a little bit more than what we actually know in terms of Russell Wilson, because he's been trending down in terms of the amount of votes that he gets in terms of these tiers and where they rank them. So maybe they know something that we know that we don't. Jared Goff and Derek Carr, two interesting guys who I think don't get enough love. And with Goff, let's talk about Goff first. Goff had a bounce back year last year, because given the fact how he left LA, it was kind of bad, and he was kind of the butt of the joke. Like, Sean McVay was talking crazy. Like, Sean McVay kind of did Jared Goff kind of wrong, you know, kind of bad mouthing him, bad talking him as he was leaving. McVay kind of, you know, says he regretted, but like McVay was openly dissing Jared Goff and violating Jared Goff, right? So that can be really hard and embarrassing to bounce back from. But 2 years later, Jared Goff had a career year. It seems as if the Lions are prone and destined for a playoff run. And here we go. We're talking about Jared Goff. Possibly he might be the Lions quarterback for the foreseeable future. I think 2 years ago, when he first got traded to Detroit, if you would have told somebody 2 years ago, hey, so in two years, Jared Goff, he might look to be like the Lions' future, and he's gonna probably lead them to the playoffs. You probably wouldn't have believed that person, but it's that could happen this year. A lot of people picking the Lions to win the North. They look damn good. I think they're gonna be a playoff team this year. So we'll see what happens with Goff, but he bounced back tremendously last year. So, you know, I always thought if you gave Goff a running game, a clean pocket, especially, give him a clean pocket, he can make a lot of the throws, especially down the field. Don't have the craziest arm, but just the spin on his passes, he can make some throws. He can make a lot of those throws. Same thing with Dak. I think it don't get talked about enough with Dak. Dak has an average arm, but Dak can make big boy throws. Jared Goff can make some big boy throws and some tight windows too, if you give him a clean pocket. Now, Derek Carr, on the other hand, Derek Carr, he's coming off probably his worst season of his career since his rookie year. Like, just bad. Like, that was like, it was kind of an abomination, because thinking back on it, you had the league's leading rusher. You had Devontae Adams, who was arguably the best receiver in football. You had Hunter Renfrow, a really good slot threat. And granted, you had Waller, but Waller wasn't there, so I give you a pass. But, I mean, he had a pretty good offensive line and the league's leading rusher and the league's best receiver. You wouldn't expect Derek Carr to have the worst year of his career. So now, in this new location with the Saints, I don't think it's being talked about enough, but there's a lot of pressure on Derek Carr. Like, there should be, at least in my opinion. Like, there should be a lot of pressure. There should be no excuses as to why Derek Carr, first, isn't the best quarterback in this division. And secondly, the Saints should win this division. Like, there's no excuses. Like this division is filled with either a Tampa Bay team who Baker's their quarterback, but he's a bridge guy. He's not their long-term plan or, you know, successor after Brady. Carolina, you know, I like Bryce Young and I like some of the pieces that they have, but he's a rookie. And then in Atlanta, you have Desmond Ridder, who is kind of unproven And the Saints overall just have a better roster than any other team in this division. So there's no excuses as to why Derek Carr should not, like, he should be in the playoffs and he should win this division. And he should be the best quarterback in this division. So I feel like there's no excuses. And, you know, pressure will be applied. I feel like it's not getting talked about enough, but, you know, that's just me. That's just me. Then we can move on. We kind of got, like, this weird group with, like, Tua. Let's start with Tua, where similar to Matthew Stafford, the health part, I'm just not sold on the health. Now, turns out Tua, he was better than what I expected last year when he actually played. But I would have to say, like, Mike McDaniel, awesome play designer, awesome play caller. Tyreek Hill is a dude. Jalen Waddle is a dude, right? Those guys can play. But, you know, it comes down to, can you even block for Tua? And I know he's doing some, I know he's been taking some Taekwondo training and classes. And then, you know, I respect to those guys, like the karate and the Taekwondo and the, you know, respecting them because they can really fight, but who gives a damn? This is football. And, you know, if Aaron Donald gets his hands on Tua, ain't no damn Taekwondo trainings is going to help that. Like, there's no solving that issue. You know, there's no solving that issue. If Myles Garrett or Chris Jones, if they get their hands on Tua, they're going to demolish him. So it ain't. And so he's a sitting duck. He's a sitting duck. So, you know, Taekwondo training's cool. That's cool and all. I, you know, respect it. Respect those people. But that ain't going to help you if TJ Watt is breathing down his neck. That ain't going to help, right? That's just not going to help. You know, that's not going to help if Joey Bosa is on his blind side. Like, no, that's not going to help. So with the Dolphins, you know, can Tua play 17 games? If I'm a betting man, and I hate to be this guy, but I wouldn't bet on it. The same could be said for Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, Jimmy, he just physically can't play 17 games. That's kind of been proven. He physically can't stay healthy for in full season. He can't. So I just like Garoppolo especially, I just don't see him playing 17 games. Now, with the Dolphins, they got Mike White as a backup plan. Mike White he kept it competitive with the Jets, and the Jets, you know, offensively was kind of last year. So I think he can do something with Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. Now, for Jimmy Garoppolo, if Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt, the Raiders are cooked. They're fried. Like, the Raiders are fried if Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt. So we'll see. We'll see with those two guys. Like, those two guys, they're injury riddled. And, you know, it'll be a big surprise if both of those guys play 17 games. It'll be a huge surprise. Daniel Jones, he's a guy that got paid. You know, when I think of Daniel Jones last year, I do think he improved, right? I think he improved. But they're similar to Derek Carr. There's going to be a lot of pressure on Daniel Jones, him being a $40 million guy. And, you know, there's people like, man, Daniel Jones got paid. The Giants couldn't even pay Saquon. Like, there's going to be that people. There's going to be those people out there that's going to talk about Daniel Jones. Last year, I thought he was the little engine that could. But this year, you know, it's going to the expectations, they're a little bit higher just based upon the fact that, like, not only that you're in New York, but then you got $40 million, and most people don't believe that you're worth it. Like, most people don't believe that you're worth it. So there's a lot of pressure on Daniel Jones. I don't really know the think of the Giants in terms of, like, overall squad. I don't feel like they've gotten much better. So if the Giants don't make the playoffs this year, there'd be a lot of heat on Daniel Jones. A guy like Ryan Tannehill, I think the writing's on the wall. I don't think it's no coincidence that the Titans have drafted a quarterback early in the past 2 years. I don't think it's a coincidence. I continue to see training camp, you know, notes and reports that, you know, that Levis is taking some first team snaps. It would not surprise me by week eight or before, even before week eight, if Will Levis or Malik Willis, more so Levis, if one of those two guys were playing and it wasn't Tannehill, I think the writing's on the wall that Tannehill's kind of, I think that he's done in Tennessee. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think the writing's on the wall. A guy like Mac Jones, can he save Belichick's job? And I know that's kind of weird to say, right? Either way it happens, I don't think Robert Kraft will ever fire Bill Belichick. But if the Patriots have a not so good year this year, which could happen, right? Or if they just fail to make the playoffs and they win seven games, which could happen. I could see the possibility of Belichick, or I can see the possibility of Robert Kraft kind of formally, you know, him and Belichick formally coming to an agreement, a mutual agreement that, hey, Belichick's going to step away and Belichick takes some glorified personnel job that's paying him seven figures, right? Seven figures. That's what I think is probably imminent to happen if Mac Jones can't save Bill Belichick. Now, Mac Jones, coming out of Alabama, I thought he had some comparable traits to Kirk Cousins. And as I already talked about with Kirk Cousins earlier, Kirk Cousins struggles in terms of off script and being able to extend plays and make off-platform throw. That's just not him. And with Mac Jones, those same weaknesses are there, where he just struggles in terms of off script and him trying to evade pressure or you know, extend plays and make something that's not Mac Jones. That's not Mac Jones at all. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works with him and Bill O'Brien. Their skill players aren't particularly great. So we'll see what New England looks like. I don't expect their offense to look so elementary and just so basic as they did last year. But I still think it's going to be a struggle for this offense to really generate some big plays when you don't have elite playmakers like with Miami. Tua's arm is Tua athletically is in terms of him extending plays, that's not his strong suit. But at least with Miami surrounding Tua, they have elite playmakers and they got a really good play designer and play caller. But with those elite playmakers, granted, Tua may not have the biggest arm, but those 10, 15 yard passes and those plays turn into 30, 45, 50-yard plays because of the explosiveness that Miami has on the outside. Whereas you compare that to New England, they don't really have those guys. They don't really have a guy that just can beat you up the field. They don't really have that. So it's going to be really hard for me to even think about them generating big plays, big chunk plays. It's going to be really hard for me to see them doing that. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. And then Justin Fields, you know, he worked himself up in tier three. And obviously, and I'll say this first. This goes for anything, right? But whenever there is a new GM and a new coach, when they come in and they don't draft you first, there's no invested interest. That's whenever a new GM or a new coach come in or a new coach come in, when they don't draft you, there's no invested interest. So they have no problem moving off of you because there's no interest, there's no investment. Because we did not draft you. And also, with that, their initial reaction is what they thought of you coming out of college as a prospect. That's another thing. And that's for young players. when GMs, whenever there's a new GM and a coach, their initial reaction is what they thought of you coming out of college. That's just what it is. Now with Justin Fields, obviously, he is, I mean, he, at Ohio State, he showed off his elite athleticism. And then since he's been in the NFL, he has shown off his elite athleticism. But he has not been good enough throwing the football. Like, point blank, period. I know it may sound cliche, but that is the truth. He has not thrown the football entirely well. And for if the Bears, if I think they're better, they look better on paper, but if they're actually going to be better, he is going to have to win games throwing the football. Like, he is going to have to win games throwing the football. And I think we're tier two and tier three, you know, I would say the separation at times is, you know, as much as we bang on, like, the Kirk Cousins and the Dak Prescotts, you know what tier two says? A quarterback that can carry his team sometimes, but not as consistently. He can handle pure passing situation in doses and or possessions, other dimensions that are special enough to elevate him above tier three. He has a hole or two in his game. So that's a description of a tier two quarterback. And you heard, like, in that description, he can handle pure passing situation in doses and or possessions. So, like I said, we bang on those guys like, you know, the Dax and the Jalen Hurts and Lamar and Kirk Cousins, but they do have the ability to throw the football to win games. Justin Fields, in order for him to elevate himself, and in order for him to show the new GM and the coach that he's the guy, in order for the Bears to win more games, he's got to throw the football better. He's got to throw so these third and obvious, like third and nines, third and eights, you know, that's where the quarterbacks make their money at. That's where they make the money at. The third and eights, the third and nines, the third and sevens. You know, the third and manageable, third and shorts, that's cool. But the third and longs with those are obvious passing downs, that's where the money is made at the quarterback spot. And if he can't elevate his level or his play to that standard, the Bears are gonna probably move off of him. And this is what happens. You know, this is what happens. So, like, as a prospect, I love Justin Fields. I love Justin Fields as a prospect. But eventually, prospects turn into players. And the player that we have seen in the last 2 years has not thrown the football well. Now, he got an upgrade at receiver spot. We intend for the offensive line to be better. So with that, the passing game has to be better. Point blank, period. You know? So those were the interesting quarterbacks in the tier two and tier three list. Tier one, like I said, tier one, those are guys. Like, you know, we ain't gotta talk about those guys. Tier four, you know, those guys are still unproven, essentially. So we gotta watch them play more. So the tier two, tier three guys, that's what I really wanted to focus on. So yeah. I'll catch you guys at this quick break. Okay, so some news that did break. It happened a few days ago. Wasn't able to talk about it immediately after it happened. But I figured since college football is around the corner, I also told you guys that we're going to have more college football topics and more college football content. Given the fact that it's right around the corner, I figured why not talk about it on the next episode and the following episode. And, it's a lot of musical chairs going on with college football realignment, and, you know, conference expansion, and, you know, some conferences are just trying to hang in there so they don't die off and just go in the background of relevancy. And that's the big part, relevancy. A lot of this comes down to, in terms of these programs, in terms of these brands, these conferences, the TV deals, and so forth, a lot of it is just based upon and based around its relevancy. Relevant. How can we remain relevant? And the big move that took place was Colorado going to the Big 12. Yes, the Buffs, the Colorado Buffs going to the Big 12. And I think it's a great move on both sides. Great move for the conference. The Big 12, they get a top 20 media market in Denver. I think Denver's a top 20 media market. So they get that. There's a lot of money in Denver. So Big 12 will receive that. They continue to expand out west, their reach out west, and they get the Colorado brand and they get Deion Sanders. So the Big 12, it's a huge win for the Big 12. But I think the bigger thing is the granular scope for me that I'm looking at it, where I commend, and this is something that I usually always talk about in my podcast, but being progressive in terms of sports, being progressive and taking a chance and being aggressive. And I commend the administration at Colorado for having a sense of urgency and moving with a sense of urgency, because they saw the boat that was the Big 12, or that is the Big 12, and it's taking on some water and it's starting to sink. That boat that is the Big 12, it's taking on some water and it got some holes in it and it's starting to sink. And the signs, the writing was on the wall when SC and USC and UCLA left. When both of those programs left, it's like, hey, yeah, we bring in a lot of money. This conference clearly is not serious. Deuces, we're going to the Big Ten. And so the writing was kind of that, like, the writing was always on the wall for the Big 12 for the last couple years. But now it's kind of that SC and UCLA move kind of stamped it. And, you know, with Colorado, they did not wait around. Obviously the Pac-12, they're having some trouble trying to get a TV deal. And like I said, Colorado, the Buffs, they were not going to wait for Oregon or Washington to make the move, because what essentially is now going to happen, those other schools like Washington State, Oregon State, the other mid-level programs in that conference, they're gonna have to wait on the big dogs. They're gonna have to wait on Oregon, which is a huge brand. They're gonna have to wait on Washington, which is a huge football brand. They're gonna have to wait on those dominoes to fall in order to have a good sense of where they're going. And so with Colorado, they did an excellent job with, okay, we got a deal in the Big 12, we're gonna take it. The instability of the Pac-12 and, you know, just where the future may loom and lend itself was just too much. It was too cloudy for Colorado. So congratulations to Colorado and good for Colorado for being able to make this move. And like I said, when we're talking about, and, you know, in college football, when we're talking about, you know, conference expansion and, you know, conference realignment, it merely comes down to relevancy. The SEC and the Big Ten, they get it. They're locked and loaded. They get it. They took away the Big 12's biggest programs in Texas and OU. Big Ten did the same thing with the Pac-12. Like, they get it. And I would also say, hey, if I'm the Big 12, and I saw a report, Florida State, and, you know, Florida State let it be known that, you know, they told the ACC, hey, we make a lot of money, we generate a lot of profit and a lot of revenue for this conference, and we don't feel like we get a big enough piece of the pie. If the Big 12 is patient, if they are patient, now they can get some other schools from the Pac-12, like the Arizonas, the Arizona State, those corner schools. They can get those guys. But if the Big 12 is patient And let's just say they, you know, they want to add another, because they have 13 teams in the conference. Odd number. If they can get 14, and if they can wait to see if they can land a Florida State or a Clemson out of the ACC, that's huge. Because if you can get one of those schools, one of those programs, or even both, then you look at the Big 12 a little bit differently. If they can land one of those big-time programs, you look at the Big 12 a little bit differently. And then from a recruiting standpoint, if you're Colorado, this is a plus. Because guess what? I talked about it a couple weeks ago with Nebraska. And, you know, I kind of talked about the downfall of Nebraska and correlating it with, maybe OU's downfall, a potential downfall of OU. But I talked about it. Nebraska, one of the biggest things as to why they fell off the map and they're not relevant is because they left the Big 12. And with them leaving the Big 12, that they lost the state of Texas in terms of recruiting. With Colorado, you get the state of Texas. So obviously, you know, Texas and Florida, that's a big selling point. And the Big 12, they have some Florida teams. And that's a whole another reason as to why, if they can wait out to get a team like a program like a Florida State, that would be so beneficial for the Big 12. But if you're Colorado and, you know, you got Deion Sanders, he can walk into kids' living room and be like, hey, okay, well, obviously our brand, my brand, but also even if you're a little bit uncomfortable leaving home, we're going to be playing games in Texas. We're going to be playing – like there's still a lot of games that we have to play in Texas. That's a great selling point. It's a great selling point. Also, you know, in terms of relevancy, visibility matters too. Visibility matters especially to the younger generation of kids. Like visibility matters. Social media and all of the media outlets and so forth. So actually, you know, actually having a national television deal – and you don't have to break it. Like, for instance, if Colorado's in the Pac-12, you don't have to be the bearer of bad news and say, hey, so you're going to be playing on national television, but the game might get cut short. You know, it might get cut short because some corny movie is going to replay, right? Like, you don't have to worry about that if you're in the Big 12. You don't have to worry about that. So visibility is huge for recruitment, and the Big 12 is like that solves that problem that Colorado potentially could have had if they remained in the Pac-12 as it stands right now. So the Big 12, obviously, they're going to go after more schools. Like I said, they have 13 teams. They can go after more schools, but it's going to get really crazy if the Big 12 could land one of those big dogs, Florida State or Clemson, out of the ACC. And like I said, for those remaining Pac-12 teams, you know, the Pac-12 will continue to lose teams. And the next big-time dominoes to really fall, you would have to imagine it would be either Oregon or Washington or both. Oregon and Washington, they're going to be the next moves in the Big 12, and it'll just fall from there. And then in terms of looking at the Big 12, you're talking about a conference the Pac-12, you're talking about a conference that will probably be comparable to the Mountain West. Simple as that. That's how it's looking. But I guarantee you, I think this is a good move for Colorado. I thought their administration did a really good job in terms of moving with urgency. And this whole thing is just musical chairs. And Colorado, they got a seat early. They sat down and they got it. And the remaining schools in the Pac-12, not so much Oregon and Washington, because they're notable brands. They'll land somewhere. But those remaining schools in the Pac-12, the music is just still playing and they're still just circling without trying to get a seat or without trying to get a chair. And now their fate is probably in the hands of whatever Oregon and Washington does next. Simple as that. So congratulations to Colorado for going to the Big 12. Big time move. And I like the move for both sides, both the conference and Colorado. But without further ado, I'm going to let you guys go. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I will try to record for you guys again this upcoming weekend. I will see. Hopefully, I'm not too busy. But always remember, two choices, one decision. Like I said, I hope you guys enjoy. Peace, deuces. I'm out.